Welcome to Season 3 of Bridge the Gap, a podcast dedicated to inform, educate, and influence the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, TIS Insurance, Morrison Living, NRC Health, One Day, Argentum, The Bridge Group Construction, and Salinity. Find out more about this podcast at btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, the senior living podcast with Josh and Lucas on our special series dedicated to COVID-19, bringing on up-to-date information about our current new normal. And today we have a very important discussion that needs to be had because it's one that affects everybody, not only around the globe, but specifically in senior living. We have on Mike Williams. He's the CEO and founder of English Meadows. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mike, you reached out to us. You've been listening to our program, been one of our loyal followers for a while. We really appreciate that. But you guys have really been hit and been experiencing what it's like to have both staff and residents affected with COVID-19. It's been challenging for everybody in the industry to be able to navigate this. And you really wanted to come on today and share your story and the lessons that you guys have learned through this process. Why don't you just start by giving us some context about the journey that you guys went through over the past couple of months, coming through flu season up into the point where you started to see some positive tests.
Sure, and I appreciate you having us, having me on, and thanks for the what you guys do in the industry of sharing information and stories like this. I thought it was important that if someone could hear what we went through, unfortunately, that it could help them if this hits their community. We have 8 campuses across Virginia that are English Meadows. Steve Orndorff and I started 11 years ago, and we now have 8 campuses, about 500 residents, about 370 caregivers around the Commonwealth. And unfortunately, our Abingdon campus was struck with a positive case back on April 3rd. And up to that point, we felt that we were actually ahead of the curve in the planning and the preparation and everything we had put into place. That was some blind luck that when I came back from New Year's, we had had such a great flu season compared to the horrible one we had the previous year, and we wanted to really end it in a special way. So we put in some new procedures. We ordered a lot of product that my crew made fun of me for ordering, and we had more Purell and new dispensers everywhere than you can imagine. And so that was a little just luck in that case. But we saw this brewing, and I had a personal interest as well because my daughter was in Switzerland, my youngest daughter, studying abroad, and we were actually over there visiting her. And during that time, I saw what was taking place next door in Italy, which we all did. But being there kind of firsthand, I started communicating with with Steve, our president, my business partner, and Trista Wilson, our COO, and really laying out the plans for let's get ahead of this because this looks like it's going to be something. And by March 1st, we had our policies. We had 3 levels of alertness that we had in place, and we moved immediately to the second level. And we were checking temperatures and monitoring visitors that came in, and we're starting to test all of the residents each day and doing a few other things and just doing that prep work. And by the middle of March, we decided to go ahead and go to our level 3, which is a complete lockdown. And we were about a week ahead of the mandated on that, but we shut off all visitors, including families. That was tough. Some families just, you know, and that's tough as a family. I've learned to put myself in the shoes of everyone involved in this, and it really helps the understanding, but, and the residents as well. You know, not only were we then saying, you've got to stay inside your home. Now we were saying, now you got to stay inside of your bedroom. And, that's something else I worry about as longer that it goes on of that, depression or separation that they're facing. But we did that, and we locked it down, and then we obviously did away with activities, and then we went to in-room dining only, which was a whole other process. And if that was the last thing we took away, because as we all know, our residents love, like we all do, to eat, but mealtimes are special. So we had all that in place, and we were over 2 weeks. We were about 17 days of that, and we felt great. And then, you know, like everyone, we were hoping this didn't hit our one of our campuses. And then it did at our Abingdon campus, which was hard to take because, you know, for any of them. But this campus is where our COO, Trista Wilson, is still the administrator, ED of. And Tina Jones, who is our the DON there, is also ahead of all of our clinical operations. They're both there. But I truly think it was a blessing and a reason that it happened. But we kept saying up to that point, I kept using the Mike Tyson quote of, everybody's got a plan until I come out and hit them in the face. And that's exact. On April 3rd, we had a resident go out that Tuesday before, and for what were stroke-like symptoms. And that was one of the big takeaways we've already learned, is the dry cough and the fever and all of those things weren't the first symptoms for any of the ones that we've really tested. It was, for resident-wise, confusion and incontinence, extreme incontinence, unusual incontinence, and things like that. So they thought maybe it had a stroke. They sent him over. For some reason, in the hospital, still didn't know why they tested him outside before they took him in. This was back when a test were still 5 to 7 days. So
he went to the hospital, and before he went into the hospital, they gave him a nose swab.
Yeah, Tuesday morning in the parking lot. And that Friday, he started showing the symptoms, the dry cough, the fever. And then that's also when the test came back positive. So they called.
After he'd already come back to your community.
No, he never came back. Okay. So that was one positive thing there at the hospital. There we have a skilled building directly behind us in Abingdon, and the newer hospital in that area is right next door too. So they actually took him and kept him there, which is kind of unusual now for what we're seeing elsewhere. But they kept him. He had the symptoms. So that was a true kind of hit in the face. And our Trista called me and alerted me. And, you know, it was for me as well. We got everyone in the corporate office together and the other administrators. And first we got on the phone with her. And they truly were like deer in headlights. They were, even though we had prepared and planned for this, it was 100 different things that were needing to be done. I think there were while we were prepared, there were some things that we were lacking, and this has been a learning experience, and our other 7 campuses have been learning every day. We immediately started a 3 p.m. call every day with all of our management team, which we've been doing every day since, in sharing what's going on. But what we learned were a few things. Communications. We had to immediately alert all of the residents and their families and our caregivers in the campus. So we all jumped on board, and we realized, well, a couple of those things were in different places. And we didn't have, you never have everyone's email addresses either, which was the quickest way to do it, or text mass, group texting. So we all jumped on board and piecemealed that and got that taken care of immediately. We worked with the Virginia Department of Health and did a press release to everyone. And then we alerted everyone on our inside. We use a great system that we communicate with all of our caregivers in our campuses. And we alerted everyone on that too, what had happened. So we wanted to communicate as much as possible. But in those first few days, we weren't great at it. So by Sunday, Monday morning, we had come up with a plan to where every morning I do an email update after talking with Trista and Tina. And I send out an email every morning to all the family members of what's going on. This is what has changed from the previous day. They know our numbers to call in and talk to us. We've actually now created an 800 number, kind of a virus hotline for a case it happens anywhere else as well. But we just wanted to over-communicate as much as possible, because those first few days we weren't great at it and we weren't organized enough to do it. So that was our first takeaway that we had, was making sure those communications were in place. And I can't urge other providers enough that, you know, those first few hours, you know, when Trista told me and I was sitting there like, you know, great, what do we, you know, what do we do? It, the first thing was, you know, how is this going to look? You know, but I think you have to get past that. I don't think not alerting people or, you know, just keeping it quiet is the best path. And I, you know, I don't know. I don't think we'll know right now how the widespread breakouts have happened. I'm very happy with our numbers now. While I would love for it to be zero, I think it could have been a lot worse in Abingdon if we weren't already preparing, but then if we didn't let everyone know what was going on. And so the over-communication is something we're doing now regularly. We've, if the media has called, we've talked to them. We've answered questions. We've told our caregivers, this is not a secret. You know, we're, you know, there's no gag rule on talking. And we've had a lot of tough conversations with families. The first things that happened to families wanted the entire campus to be tested, all 120 some people. And I think I was one of those big proponents of that. Yeah, let's test everyone. And now fast forward a few weeks, we know that if you don't have a symptom, most likely that test is going to be a negative. So a false negative. And the Virginia Department of Health, thankfully, immediately, they were taught, we were talking to them two or three times a day. They were saying, this is, it's not a good idea. And here's why. And finally, after talking to families and the caregivers and their families enough, we realized, yeah, that's when their symptoms come up, we isolate you from the building and that, and then we'll do the test. And if it comes back negative, great. If it comes back positive, we'll deal with it. But we've kept them away from the building in these cases.
So let's go back to that first case and talk to us about how that transpired out at that moment and how you found out about other cases and then were able to isolate that to just a very small number.
Okay. So that gentleman went out on Tuesday morning. We found out Friday right after lunch. He had been in the hospital the whole time, so he had not been back in the community. So we started the process with notifying everyone. About that same time, we had another resident who started showing the symptoms, the traditional symptoms. So that resident was sent over to the hospital immediately and was tested. The following Saturday afternoon, another resident had the same symptoms and was sent over. So at that point, all three of our positive residents to date were sent out of the building by that next day, by that Saturday. From that point, we started having some of our caregivers that we tested. And those actually were spread across through basically last Thursday was the last person so far of our caregivers that was tested positive. And so we learned over time. And this is another kind of strange thing that was happening with the residents. You know, they went to the hospital. This hospital kept them. And that has not been the case that we're seeing. And I'm not sure why they kept the residents from that point. But what we've been trying to push is, please keep the resident until we get a test back if we send them with symptoms. And if they're positive, please keep them. And please wait until the test is done. And that's been a struggle with the other campuses. But with Abingdon, those three residents went out. They all started decreasing. And I'll tell you, two of the three residents were some of our out of the 82 were some that Trista and Tina considered were in best physical shape in the building. So there was no rhyme or reason. There was one memory care and two AL. And so there wasn't, these weren't people who were our most frail or physically unable to handle this. But they progressively got worse. They were put on ventilators. But I'm pretty confident two out of the three were getting better. One of them, they were actually even had taken off the ventilator and said they were going to discharge them back to the rehab. And but all three ended up passing, unfortunately, by the following Friday. And so we out of the three positive residents, we did lose all three of them. And that was another blow to our team, our family down in Abingdon was that happening.
So talk to us a little bit about, from the team perspective, you've had some positive team tests. Sounds like it's been almost a week past from us having this conversation today. How has the team responded to that? How have you guys responded? What's different now?
On that day, we had about 53 or 54 caregivers that worked in that campus. From that first day, unfortunately, about 20% left that day. That was something we weren't prepared for, but it happened. And so they had about 11 or 12 that left and did not come back for personal reasons. But the ones that remained, we already knew who we had, the family we had down there. Our whole management team down there, consisting of 5-6 people, have been with us since day one, well, over 4.5 years. The turnover has been almost zero there. So we knew what we had, and the rest of the team stood up in ways, you know, you hope would happen in your family, as we call ourselves, and especially in that immediate family, but they did. And they all of a sudden said, I'm, you know, going to work 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week. I'll do whatever it takes. I'm going to come in the building no matter what. We said, if you want to be separate, several asked, can we be separate from our family? So we've had them in hotels ever since. Up to that point, another little thing we did, before this, we implemented, we gave a $2 an hour raise to all hourly caregivers across the company. We tried to do everything else. We actually have two kind of makeshift daycare centers working where, because the school's closed and the daycare center's closed. We were taking care of several kids there kind of on the side. And so, you know, that had to stop. So these people found other ways for their kids to be taken care of, even though we kind of had to stop that because we had run out of staff and they couldn't be anywhere near the building. So they found ways to do that. They changed their whole lives around, and they were willing to stay in here because they were first and foremost, they were dedicated to the residents. That's why we're all in this industry. And so they really stood up and I've been down there quite a bit, but have not been in the building, and because we don't want anyone in the building that doesn't have to be there. So just standing out back from 20 feet away, talking to whoever's out back and, you know, taking them PPE and all this stuff. And they're just, you know, how we're going to thank these people personally and as an industry is going to be a question that we're all going to have to answer down the road. I think they already knew we cared about them, but, you know, that we're going to owe them. They're the ones carrying us through this. Then that Sunday night, we were realizing, you know, we've lost 20% of our staff. Another 10% are over that week. We had another we've tested 29 people, residents and staff combined, and we've had 20 negatives. So, but during that time, those people had to stay out of the building, the caregivers. So we had even more that we had lost. So Sunday night, I was talking to Greg, our head of culture, and Kim, our HR, and Kari in our HR department, said, let's come up with we ended up calling them our traveling heroes. And over the next 2 days, let's see who in the other campuses would want to come volunteer to go into a positive building. The crazy thing was, by that lunch Monday, I'd already had 6 people reach out to me asking if they could volunteer to go before they knew we were doing this. So, you know, things happen for a reason, and, you know, you never underestimate people. And so right now we have 6 young caregivers, but volunteer, they left their families, you know, and are staying at the hotel now working 70, 80 hours a week in that building.
Wow. That's powerful. That's a powerful story. A couple of questions here. You know, we've heard, and obviously we've seen a lot of hotels have closed, but it seems like there's a little bit of a partnership here where there is at least a a hotel open, and your team are there. What has that relationship been like for that hotel, knowing that they have team members that work in a senior care community, that that's kind of their respite area for them to stay safe?
Well, that's a great question, because immediately when I told Kari in the office, we and Shannon, you need to book hotels, I gave them my list that where Steve and I have stayed in Abingdon when we were starting that building up. It's like, okay, call the Martha Washington, which is the Grand Hotel. Well, they were closed. So, okay, we'll call the Hilton, because I'm a Hilton guy, the Hampton Inn. The Hampton Inn was closed. So there was a Marriott that's literally right at that exit in Abingdon, and they were open. And they're only open for frontline people working at the hospital or the rehab or any of the assisted livings. So they are now housing 10 of our people. We have 10 rooms there, and they are doing everything. So I showed up there Sunday morning. We had those 6 caregivers go that were there, and they had left their families. They were 3 days in being away from their families. So my wife and kids went and made Easter baskets, and I delivered them, you know, Sunday morning to the hotel for them, so they would have something there since they were away. And I went there and talked to the manager, and they were cleaning, you know, everything was shut down. And she told me, we're open for these people. So they knew right away. And then later in the week, we found out we had our last, so far, caregiver who tested positive, which is our 6th caregiver. She was staying at the hotel to be away from her family. So we in the health department notified the hotel, but they were fine because they said, hey, we're doing the proper cleaning. They're having, they're giving cleaning supplies to the people staying there. They don't go in their rooms to clean. And they said, hey, your people are all doing what we've asked. They walk in and out of the building with masks on. So there's no interaction. They go outside doors. So that's been a great partnership with that Marriott there in Abingdon. If they weren't open, I don't know where we would be, or if they had thrown us out because there was one positive in the building and said, you guys are going to go. The options were dwindling on hotels.
Well, you know, what a positive story there of the partnership between hospitality and healthcare. What encouraging stories that your team has shared. And gosh, you know, what an eye opener for, I think, so many that will be listening to this too, with all the things that you've been so gracious to share your time and your stories of what you've learned, even though you guys were so prepared, but nothing really kind of quite prepares you for when it happens. And, you know, all I can think of is for those communities that are out there that don't have a case yet on the team member side or anywhere in their community from a resident side. It sounds like a really good idea is to take much of what you've shared and what you've learned and actually do a scenario of, hey, we have a situation, and let's just create a scenario where we are being notified, just like English Meadows, that we have a case. What are we going to do on communication? What are we going to do? What are we going to ask of our staff? How are they going to respond? What are we going to tell our team members? What are we going to tell the media? And just pretend, if you don't have that case now, pretend that you do and run through those scenarios with your team. It seems like that would be a great exercise, wouldn't you say, Mike?
Yeah, Josh, yeah, that's exactly right, and exactly what we've been doing with our other 7 campuses. As I mentioned, we do that 3 o'clock call every day, but there are 9 of us here in our corporate office. We all have our own duties, but we immediately took up one person and made them a buddy with that campus and said, let everything we're learning from Abingdon, like you said, create a scenario if it happens in that campus. So the communication, we have phone lists ready, an email, a secondary email list created like we have for Abingdon, so we can communicate, press release available. We've actually already reached out to had the communication. We went ahead and had these conversations with the caregivers in those campuses. Hey, are you going to stay? Or are you going to go? No judgment. You know, we all need to do what we think's best for ourselves, but hopefully they're staying and they're focused on care for the residents. Same thing with our providers that come in the building, hospice, rehabs, home health, labs. Are you going to keep coming into the building if we have a positive case, and what are the plans there? We've communicated with all the hospitals around, because not all hospitals are willing to take a case and positive, or if they're waiting for a test, unless it's a severe respiratory situation. So are you going to send someone who you think might be positive to the hospital? Then what happens if they come back? Or what if they're just positive and they send them back? Are you going to be able to separate them? Because we have a 220 licensed bed community campus, and we have a 22 bed licensed campus. And the fortunate thing for us is most of our campuses were at 100% or near 100%. So we don't have, if that small campus has a cases positives coming back, we don't have a separate wing or unit that we can block off and say, this is our positive. So that juggling act of, you know, or this is their home, they need to come back here, but what about everyone else? I think that's a tough thing. And then just keeping everyone motivated, because every day, everyone's on high alert every day. I think another plan that we implement, a few other things besides the communication and the conversations, we had a cleaning, like one of the high, they call them a level three, that came in and spent 3 days doing things to the common areas that prevent the surfaces from being reinfected and cleaning anything. We did that. You know, that's a big expense. There's a lot of, you know, the PPE, which I think we've spent about $250,000 on PPE. That we were ahead of the game there. We have a group purchasing organization, HPSI, and Christy immediately stepped up for us, and we have so many masks. We actually had a competitor sell us some masks at the beginning too, which we thank them for that. We've given some masks to a competitor that needed some, but we have a lot of masks. We have a lot of the things. Gowns are kind of the tough one right now to find, but we're right next door to Virginia Tech, and we went to them. They sold us at cost about 1,500 of the ponchos with the hoods you would wear to a football game if it was raining. So we distributed those as backups, which was great. The people at Abingdon complained that Tennessee wasn't on it, and the people in Crozet complained UVA wasn't on it. But, you know, there was, you know, we were fortunate enough to be able to have a lot of those things, but I know some communities don't have a way to get those now. But we've just been buying anything and everything we can to make sure our crew's protected. Because you start going through that stuff very quickly.
Mike, some great information, some great stories from you guys as healthcare heroes at English Meadows Community that you refer to as family. And we're hearing so many positive stories coming out of senior living where teams are rallying together just like yours are. And demonstrating the heart and the passion and the compassion that we've always said is so prevalent in our industry. So what would you say to your family at English Meadows right now, and to all those in the senior living industry that are working hard on the front lines?
Well, I think before this happened, I was saying, and these are things you guys know because I've heard these things on your show about how senior living is poised to be the true primary caregiver for seniors and the bigger role we're going to take in their health. And a lot of the guests you've had on have said that. And so we've been pushing that. But since this has happened and the preparation and seeing what our crew, because even before this, they were all, when I would say, you know what, guys, we should do this. And they're like, we're already doing that. Our cleaning crew, our restaurant crew, they've already decided to do that. Those were the moments that were like, you know, wow, you know, we're not having to push people. They're pulling us in certain spots. But on our, what we use, our work, the workplace app that we use, which has really brought us together, we've been using that for over 2 years now. They hear me saying a lot, you know, I love you guys, you know, you're family. And we do say that. And the biggest thing that I've said is the secret. People say, well, how have you guys grown and how are you doing so well? And it's like, I've always heard that you should separate family and business, and I'm glad that I never did that. And I think because we have people who are truly family to Steve and I and to each other and to these residents, and that's the way we treat them. It's not a tagline or anything. We they're family to us, and I think that makes a difference now more than ever. And we owe English Meadows owes everything, you know, to the caregivers who are truly with the residents every day, and we all do. And I think senior living, when we come out of this, we're going to see there's been a lot of negative headlines, but if we go out there and keep sharing what we're experiencing, you know, our residents, we've had families come and say, I don't want to, you know, should I take my resident out? The residents are like, this is my home. I love these people. I'm going to stay here. I feel safer here than anywhere. And I think that's going to show for senior living as a whole.
Powerful.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, so appreciate your leadership. We appreciate you taking time to share your story with us. Appreciate what all of your team is doing to care for each other, to care for the industry, to care for the elders and the families that you all serve. And Lucas, I know that we're going to want to connect Mike and his team to our listeners. And I know they're going to want to bend your ear, Mike, on a lot of points for sure.
Yeah, we're here to help. Absolutely. We'd love to share anything we can. We're definitely all in this together.
We greatly appreciate that, Mike. A very brave and courageous team there, and a brave story. So to our listeners that are out there, we hope that this is a great learning conversation for you. We would love to continue the conversation with you. Please reach out to us because it's sharing stories like this that's going to help us all get better. So know that we are thinking of you. We are praying for you. And thank you for listening to Bridge the Gap.
For a full library of episodes, merchandise, and the 2020 conference tour schedule, visit btgvoice.com. Join the conversation on social media by following @btgvoice, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode.